You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. My name's Bob.
And I'm Tom.
Oh, I did my name. It's all right. Hey, guys. Guess who's not here, Tom?
The straw that stirs the drink, as or he refers to himself.
Oh, he loves that. Yeah. Yeah. The battery acid that drips in the pool. Albany fly that gets in your butter, the humid weather on a cool fall day. Patrick's not here. We're soldiering on. He decided to go on tour. Some small band called Thrice decided to take his acoustic folk punk band on tour. So cool. Hope they're having a fun time. Here they're catching trains from gig to gig.
Doing that? Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, does he watch Jeremy as he records his podcast?
Yo, I think he does. It's like one of those things. He's sitting there with a bag of like vegan Doritos popping them and he's watching.
Right. And I mean, like, what's that like?
Yeah. Jeremy just grinding, doing the work. So shout out to our compatriot here, hearing good things from the road. If you get a chance to go see Self-Defense on the road with Thrice and Touche, please do so. Check dates online.
Seems to be doing very well.
Yeah, seems like it. I'm happy with it. I think they're playing six songs, but they're longer songs, so you get your money's worth. Live reaction seems like it's been good. Tom, let's talk sponsors real quick. Today is one of those days where we do the "Hey, we love you all" style shout outs and keep it tight. Shout out to Death Wish Inc. Thank you. Deathwishinc.com. We're not even doing anything big. Converge Blood Moon. Who sings on that, Tom?
So it's Converge with Stephen Brodsky and Chelsea Wolf.
Damn. All right. We're going to talk about that more later.
Yeah.
Go check that out at deathwishinc.com. To Live a Lie, to livealie.com.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm used to Pat filling in some of the gaps.
I know. I'll try to do some. I'm going to do Pat voice. Like, I don't even know how different it is in register. It's a little different, but to live a lie, go get some stuff. Run for Cover Records. Runforcoverrecords.com. I'm trying to think what the new Mac Thaverscan record is out. Swedish band who has been around for a minute.
I never knew. I enjoy their records quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I never know how to say the name like an ignorant American that I am.
Mac Thaverscan. Not as hard as we would think, but you see those letters all together and
there's no vowels.
Like, yeah. You're like, oh, runforcoverrecords.com. Go get it. Last, certainly not least, Closed Casket Activities. Closedcasketactivities.com.
They have a lot of stuff coming out.
Lots.
I don't know what it is, but he had a lot of test presses piled up.
Yo, was that such a good tease, though, right?
It's such a good tease, because people will screenshot it and then try to, like, look and be like, you know, product of Czechoslovakia, you know, Czech Republic, and try to see, like, it's like CCA 172 fucking Slayer or whatever, but they you can never tell. He's good.
He's really good. I like the teases, everybody. So everybody, go check out their websites. Follow all our friends on social media. Thank you for the support. We kept these ads tight. But one of the things that's not an ad, but that is friends supporting friends, we have been supported by so many people. You know what's really nice, Tom? Patrick is more effusive with his praise here for our listeners than he normally is. And I think that's you and I rubbing off on him. So that's really cool.
Right? Yeah.
You know, like,
we're teaching
him. Show the way. Bunch of different bands have supported us a lot, people, et cetera, et cetera. One of the big events that supported us from the jump is Promcore, and I wanted to hand it over to you. Their show is coming up very soon.
That is correct. First of all, before we even get to that, I wanted to give a shout out to Time Pressure.
Yes.
We'll be playing, but they're also breaking up, and a lot of people are very upset by that. So
I believe they have one local show, and this are their last two shows. So,
Promcore. Yeah. It just, a lot of people were very upset. So thank you for your support, your service to Hardcore. Great band. We're sad to see you go, but I know sometimes adult life pulls you in different directions. So, Promcore in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm. And in honor of this, I watched The Outsiders last night.
Nice. Good work.
Hadn't seen it in a very long time. Still a great movie, man.
I think it holds up.
Did you know? Now any of the bands that are listening to this that are playing, oh, you probably know this already. Perfect World and those dudes better to go do this. So Danny Boy O'Connor from House of Pain.
Yes.
Bought the Outsiders house.
What?
And now it's an Outsiders museum in Tulsa.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So it's like where they all live. Yeah. It's a great movie. And I liked it as a kid, and watching it, I watched it literally last night, and it's still fucking awesome. It's still so good. And punk and hardcore stole so much shit from that, Indecision included.
So shout out 731 Curtis Brothers Lane in Tulsa. So
is that what it's called?
That's the address.
Well, that's new. Yeah, right. That's where Dolly and Pony Boy and Soda Pop lived.
So, that's a movie I haven't watched in a while. I think I'm going to have to put that on my...
It's on HBO. I was like flipping through and I was like, you know what? We were talking about like comfort bands and comfort movies and stuff. That's a comfort movie. And I watched it last night and I was like, I really got to go throughout this recycling. I'm like, yeah, but Johnny's going to stab the greaser. They're going to stab the soch soon. So I can't really leave right now. So October 22nd and 23rd, Friday and a Saturday at the Vanguard in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm. The Friday lineup from opener to headliner, Take It to Heart, Gagging Order, Sanity Slip, Three Poisons, Rot, Strangle You, Fox Lake, Gum, Flashback, Mind's Eye, Omerta, Sledge, and Scowl.
Nice.
Scowl's killing it out there.
Yeah, straight up.
Saturday, longer day, obviously. So this is the 23rd, also at the Vanguard in Tulsa. Caustic, Prevention, Fist of Fury, End on End, Blind Idol, Gates to Hell, While God Sleeps, which is a good name, Bitter Truth, Pickwick Commons, Discourage, Life Force, Fixation, Perfect World, In Love, Ballista, Chemical Fix, Cell, Constraint, Rejection Pact, Time and Pressure, Upright, Fame, Karma, Purgatory, and Zulu headlining Saturday.
Wow.
That'll be fun.
That's really cool. What I really appreciate about Promcore is that it is a pretty big representation of bands in the middle of the country. Oh, hey, maybe that's a good tie-in for today's topic. And all over, but really cool. A lot of newer bands, and I think that's awesome. Showing that support, not being afraid to put newer bands up towards the top of the bill, saying, hey, this is what's now, this is what matters. So big shout out to that. One of the things that, you know, to read the boilerplate, but when boilerplate matters, I think it's cool. Promcore is an annual punk and hardcore fest that is a benefit for Oklahomans for Equality. Since 1980, Oklahomans for Equality seeks equal rights for LGBTQ+ individuals and families through intersectional advocacy, education programs, alliances, and the operation of the Dennis R. Neal Equality Center. Yo, that's really cool.
Hell yeah.
Just as a thing, if you're trying to do something and you're bored or you don't have something to do, look into things like this. Look into doing stuff like this. It doesn't matter how you get involved. Maybe you go volunteer your time, or maybe you put on a show and make it a benefit. And if you raise $10 or $10,000, anything in between, that's a step in the right direction. So shout out to Prom Corps, October 22nd and 23rd. Pretty sure there's a pre-show on Thursday, October 21st at the Legion. So look online for that. Everybody go check that out. Tom, how are we feeling today?
Do you want the real answer?
Let's be real. We'll make next episode. We'll go, and everybody who's listening every week, next episode, we'll do like roses and sunshine.
Got it. Well, I'm partially glad Pat's not here right now.
Mm.
So he couldn't get in his Joe Rogan, John Joseph bag.
Okay.
But your fully vaccinated boy got COVID.
Yo, see,
pretty sure I caught it at a show.
Oh boy. Let's use this as a learning tale for people.
PSA.
Yeah. PSA. Yeah. Yo, PSA 10. This is, you can catch it. Guess what? That's vaccines. As Bradley Beal maybe told us, hey, you know, I thought you got vaccinated and you couldn't catch it. No, that's not what they do.
That's not true.
Not how vaccines work. But how are you feeling? That's the most important question.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really all that bad. Not to be like, and I took ivermectin, like fucking John, like Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. But I'm thankful that I was vaccinated because, like, I'm not the youngest guy in the world, and I'm, you know, not in the best shape.
Right.
So, like, this, I mean, people, you know, and you know, not too far afield from me have died from this. People that we know, hardcore people.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, before like the vaccines were out and stuff like that.
That's right.
So like, I'm very, very thankful for science because you might be doing a fucking memorial show at some point after this. Christ. That's serious, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's sort of, I lost smell and taste.
Okay.
It feels like a sinus infection.
Okay. Yeah.
My version. I mean, but like,
yeah.
It could be, you know, but thankfully I have like no problem breathing. No, like none of like the major things that they're looking for.
Yeah. The scary, the really scary thing.
The really scary shit. Yeah. The things that like make my entire family all call me individually every day. And that, which is cool.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's better. Yeah. It's better than the alternative. But yeah. So like I found out the end of last week and I was like, oh, well, good thing I'm a hermit. So like it wasn't hard to be like, well, it was either then or then. That was it.
Right.
So like when you test positive, at least in New York, that information is shared with like your local like health department. So like I got calls from like the health department being like, so, you know, you test positive. Let me ask you these 17 million questions. And they're like, you know, where'd you go? And I named like two places. And they're like, can we have a list of all the people that you were with, like you hung out with in the last week?
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, I work from home and I haven't been out since the 22nd. So, here is the two people that I've seen since then. And I was like, I've already spoken to them and they've tested negative, but like, yeah. That's but, really it. I'm like, thankfully that I'm not social because it would make my life a lot more difficult. This was like, I've been two places in the last 2 weeks and I've seen three people and that was it.
Most importantly, good thing that you're feeling good. This should be a good reminder because you're right. You're totally right. And I think it's taken for granted. We're not going to spend the whole day talking about COVID, but it's taken for granted the difference between having a minor case where it's a hindrance, it's a bother, it's annoying, you don't feel great for a while, and going to the hospital and having something really serious happen in your life. You know, so
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, yeah, it's brutal. I mean, what I would do, my only piece of advice is even if you don't think you have it, get checked anyway.
Yeah.
Cause I was like, I had like, you ever have like the onset of like a summer cold that takes like 4 days to really kick in? And you're like, fuck, I can feel myself getting sick. I'm going to OD on like orange juice and like vitamin D.
Yes, 100%.
You can be like, oh, my throat's a little scratchy. Oh, man. Like, it's gonna suck, and then it like either it happens or it doesn't. That's what it felt like. So, and then like I was in like a work meeting, and they're like, "Oh, you can do this to get tested." And I was like, "You know what? I went to like a fucking wrestling show with 20,000 people.
Yeah. Oh,
you give it a shot.
Yeah. Why not?"
And I was like, "Oh, did not expect that answer." You know, so if you have the ability, you know, or the insurance, whatever, I mean, most places don't charge you.
Yep.
If you've been around a ton of people and you're going to see people that are at risk or other family members, or whatever, like elderly or whatever.
Yep.
Take the time. Seriously, it's because you'd never know. I would have walked around with this thing thinking like this fucking cold will not go away.
Right. And you personally probably would have hit the same wall that you are hitting now. Not like, you know, not terrible, but like, man, and eventually it goes away and you go, oh, I just had a cold. But
yeah. And if I would have been interacting with people.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so that's my tale of woe.
Well, yo, I am feeling fine. I have not been sick, but I'm waiting for something to kick in, be it allergies, flu, etc. And now the pending onset of like, oh shit, do I have COVID now too? So that's not fun. Tom, you know what is fun?
Hardcore.
Hardcore is fun. And we are doing something special because there is typically a P, a B, and a T. And we have no P, so it is TB. And when I think of TB, I think of Tom and Bob, of course. But I also think of...
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. TB12, Tom Brady, number 12.
Warrior.
Neither of us are New England Patriot or Tampa Bay Buccaneer fans. But yo, he's the greatest quarterback of all time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really hard to argue against.
Like, John Elway is my favorite football player, maybe favorite athlete of all time. And I still can't say he's the best because Tom Brady has 7 Super Bowl rings. And by the time it's all over with, not only will he have every record, but it'll be by like a wide margin. So, In honor of all the greatest and good things and great things, we have TB, Tom and Bob, 12, TB12, where we're going to do a little thing where we're going to, and we'll see, maybe we'll add PTB sounds like some sort of a test. So when Patrick does come back, we'll figure it out. But TB12, and today's TB12, 12 of our favorite, best, whatever you might put it, 12 of our favorite Midwest bands.
Yeah. And I needed Bob to kind of give me the parameters. To me, like anything west of like Newark and east of like LA is the Midwest to me, and that's probably not fair.
Well, yo, you're just that New Yorker cover, right? The famous one where, like, it shows a New Yorker's view of the world.
Yeah.
And it's just like New York, it's the city, it's here's all the, you know, Broadway and, you know, whatever, and then it's New Jersey, and then it's the Midwest, California, and the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, I mean, if you were like Stroudsburg would count, they'd go, yeah, it sounds about right.
Well, because this is also low-key a geography podcast, as you may not have caught, because we get real geeked out on it. The first thing I did was send Tom a map that I outlined what we're counting as the Midwest. So we are counting Kentucky because the major cities in Kentucky basically consider themselves halfway Midwest. And I've seen Louisville bands refer to themselves as Midwestern bands. So that works. Despite the fact that Erie and Pittsburgh feel very Midwestern, we're going to keep Pennsylvania in the Northeast or the Mid-Atlantic. Despite the fact that once you get out to Western Pennsylvania, you might as well be in the Midwest. The Midwest, for our definition, starts in Ohio, goes all the way across, and we're allowing part of Kansas, we're allowing Nebraska, the Dakotas, Minnesota, Michigan, and going down, cut off at Arkansas. We'll let Arkansas be part of the South, and Missouri is both part of the South and Midwest. Kentucky, part of the South and Midwest. Tennessee, not a part of the Midwest, part of the South. So that's our geographic definitions. Tom, we talk a lot about New York bands.
Yes.
I think people understand why. Both geographic leanings, because we're all centered from here, all grew up going to shows here. You literally are a New York hardcore guy.
I am.
We have some leanings, obviously, but low key, one of the bands that the three of us talk about kind of a lot is Negative Approach. Like,
yeah,
like they get referenced by us on the podcast, but like maybe even more off air. Like we talk, Negative Approach is just like an incredible band. So, you know, we figured it was a good time to show love to Midwest bands from Jump till now. We're going to include hardcore and hardcore adjacent, and give you our 12 favorites. I don't know if yours is in any particular order, Tom. Let's go back and forth. You want to kick us off?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, mine, like I sort of like went around the map because I really wanted to think and be like, all right, like maybe they don't jump out to you right off the bat, but like, think of this town, think of this state and like really think about it.
Okay.
And because like, if you were like Wisconsin, you'd be like, oh fuck, I don't know. Like I came up with one from Wisconsin. Okay. All right. So my first one, which this is in no real order, but I think this would be number one to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe number two.
Okay.
We're going to go to Cleveland. We're going to Taggarty.
Yeah. Right. They're also on my list. Yeah. Yeah. Like, so when we double up, we'll just both talk on it now. What can be said about Integrity that hasn't been said? Did you see them in the 90s?
Yes.
Okay. Where?
Funny enough, Albany, New York.
That's right.
Because if you've ever been on the internet ever, they weren't allowed to play New York City proper.
Yes. You know, this was common knowledge even in the 90s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you were into hardcore and you weren't like real fresh, you knew, oh, Integrity can't play New York. Oh, why?
Yeah.
You know, there's some problems.
There's some stuff. Yeah. They actually were on a flyer at CB's with Hatebreed and Shutdown. I remember going just because it was Hatebreed and Shutdown. And it was them and One Life Crew. And I was like,
yep.
There's like no way these dudes are showing up, right? Like even then I knew that it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Spoiler, they didn't show up, but they were on the flyer.
Yep. Oh yeah.
But yeah, so we were playing a Saturday in New Paltz and we were all dying to see, this is 96. So this is on Humanity, I think. Mm-hmm. And we all really wanted to see them. So we drove up the night before, saw them at the QE2.
Wow.
I talked to Dwid. He had, all white contacts on. And I go, what the fuck's going on in your eyes, man? He's like, oh, my friend works for the X-Files.
Oh, interesting. I wonder if that's true, if he just made that up.
I mean, if it was right at the tip of his tongue. So if he made that up, he's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's really
good. He was very nice.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or are they going to say it? Yes, vegan and veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. You can get chef prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring, maybe gardening. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. That is the type of meal I prefer. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Now, I'd like you to head to factormeals.com/axetogrind50. That's numeral 50. And use code axetogrind50. That's numeral 50. To get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's insane. That's code AXTOGRIND50 at factormeals.com/AXTOGRIND50. That's to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Crazy.
See, I thought like weird contact lensed with started maybe like a couple years later. but it makes sense. 96. Man, when did
but it was as if he had no pupils and no irises.
Yeah, that's really weird, man. How were they? To memory.
They weren't as good as I was expecting. And this was like the legit lineup, too. This was like the brothers and everything.
Yep, Melnick's. Yep.
His voice is a little too like wasn't as cutting as I was expecting it to be.
Okay.
It was kind of like
more gravel. Right.
And it wasn't like I expected it to be like, you know, like more screaming, like not like in that low register, but like it was very kind of like garbled. But it was cool. I mean, it was so awesome to see them because I was like, I may never see them again. So this is cool.
Yeah.
And like they might have played like cool. Jersey, like right before, like I wasn't able to get there, whatever the fuck the story was, maybe at Middlesex, whatever.
So no,
but they weren't allowed to play the Five Boroughs.
No, so. They weren't allowed to play the Five Boroughs, and they play Middlesex. I want to say it's pretty early. It's not like 91, but I think it's like 92, 93, maybe 94, but I think it's before that. I think it was earlier.
I thought so too. Yeah.
And Dwid came out, I believe legend goes, and there's definitely someone listening to this podcast who's there. So correct me if I'm wrong. Cause this is like second or third hand story that I've heard. He came out wearing a really weird off color Integrity or Youth of Today, Youth Crew 88 shirt. So the Youth Crew 88 shirts are the Youth Crew Across America shirts. It's from the tour they did in 1988, where they went across the whole country. They brought the screens in the van with them. So when they'd run out of shirts, they'd stop somewhere, maybe get whatever they can get, find someone, print the shirts, stop, see if they knew somebody who worked at a shop or figured it out, see what they could do. Obviously, that happened in Cleveland. He got some weird one-off shirt and came out and was wearing it. It was like one of those things, maybe threw it off. You know, again, a big thing for the shirt collectors out there. Integrity came into being an important band for me pretty early. I've talked about it before, but for somebody who hasn't listened to, you know, almost 200 episodes.
What else have you been doing?
Right. Where are you at? Get in there. I always was looking for a harder metal influenced hardcore band that fit what I wanted. And Integrity kind of hit it right off. And for a lot of people, it's not super metal, but that's not what I was looking for. And it was like, they just went that level beyond Judge on Bringing It Down, which is the easy comparison, but it fits so well. Like they just took on Those Who Fear Tomorrow. Certainly they just went maybe two steps further over and really nasty, ugly music. I really get like, we can talk about how there's an entire Integrity core world. I think everybody kind of knows that. If you aren't, look into it. There's just a ton of bands who do that sound. But I get it. Like if a crust kid said, I want to get into heavier hardcore, this is one of the first bands you hand them, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think with Integrity's known love for like Japanese hardcore and stuff.
Yeah.
Like this is like the perfect job. It's like, it's
fast
it's,
enough. They do some of the metal stuff.
It's a little moshy, but like it's not too like testosterone-y over here.
That's true. That's true.
You know,
it's weird. It's so we have also done, I think we did a whole episode where we really kind of dug into the Integrity thing, but they're a band who I think really deserves the attention. I have to admit, the last record on Relapse, I think I listened to it once when it came out and I haven't revisited. I really need to give it a chance. I've heard good things about it. Yeah, people seem to like it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they're a band that you can kind of jump on and jump off as often as you'd like.
Yes.
Because I feel like, are there only like three records you really need to know? Yeah.
I think so. I think Need.
You know what I mean? Sure. It's that like 91 through 96 era.
You pick those, you get those. Especially that Systems Overload remix, remaster, the whole thing. That's, people love that. And I listened, I was like, oh yeah, this does sound better. But yeah, like I think you're a fan too, but like the 2003 reunion record, the To Die For record, like I like that. I think that's good.
Oh yeah.
I've heard a few of the records after, some good stuff, some stuff that loses me, but, still a cool band. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I think,
I mean, literally, and just like, they're not trying to sound like, you know, Those Who Fear Tomorrow.
Yeah. And I mean, is Those Who Fear Tomorrow your favorite of their records? Or is it Humanity or System?
I mean, it might be Humanity.
Okay. Okay.
But Those Who Fear Tomorrow is pretty fucking great. But I think Humanity is just so like concise.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a
like
lot.
You put on Hollow for anybody that likes heavy music. You're like, yep, I get it.
Yeah. I'm an all in for Those Who Fear Tomorrow guy, but it's kind of their only record that sounds like that. You know, like it's not.
Yeah.
You go from there and there's stuff that's obviously, it's still the same band, but it's not. They're doing more. They actually get faster, you know?
Yeah.
Those Who Fear Tomorrow is a lot stompier and kind of more mid-tempo and dirging without being true dirges, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
All right. I actually added Integrity Howling for The Nightmare Shall Consume, the 2017 relapse, to be on my listen-to list.
Shout out to Romeo.
Yes. Yeah.
Shout top out player on that.
Mr. A389. All right, so you nailed Integrity. They're, if not number two for me, they're right in there. I think I'm going to do number one really quick. Just knock it out.
Sure.
Negative Approach.
That was number one. What do you say?
So, if you're building a house of hardcore, they're one of the first couple bricks.
Easily.
Yeah, I mean, they might be all the wood in the house. You know what I mean? Like, I like Minor Threat more. Negative Approach might be more important structurally for the sound of hardcore than Minor Threat.
I can see that.
For the average band, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
How many bands come around that you go, oh, they sound like Minor Threat, but with this or this? Not many. How many bands you say, oh, it sounds kind of like Negative Approach?
All I mean, they both, the singers make them different, but I think it's people. I feel like Ian MacKaye is like almost impossible to mimic.
It's very hard.
But I think like John Brandon's voice is incredible, but you can like kind of get close enough.
You can go burly, right? You can get burly on that.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do it. So I think, one of the top five hardcore 7-inches of all time, probably.
Oh, yeah.
And then I would say Tied Down. Like, man, might be in the top. For me, it's like a top 15, maybe top 20 on a bad day, hardcore 12-inch, you know, like
LP. Oh, yeah.
Like, it's so good. And it's like, Tied Down is only inferior when compared to the 7-inch. And even that, and like, I'm a pretty big Tied Down dude. Like, there's days where you catch me, I'm like, man, I just love the sound of Tied Down and the fact that they didn't develop, the sound develops, right? It's not pure blasts at that point, but they're just, damn, man, they're just killer.
You want a hot take?
Yeah, hit it.
Negative Approach, better than Black Flag.
Woo, woo.
I think we'll talk about that another time, but that's my take. Shot for shot,
yeah.
Negative Approach is better than Black Flag. Black Flag has a lot of bullshit, and Negative Approach doesn't.
Wow. I mean,
that's why Minor Threat is as important as it is, because Minor Threat has no shit.
No, I mean, like, yo, even here's the thing. You want to be a critic of Minor Threat. Let's be critical of Minor Threat. Guilty of Being White doesn't age well.
No.
Has to, like, you have to explain context. Even the context doesn't hold up that well. No. But it's like, okay.
Cashing in, corny song.
Right. Not the best. Otherwise, it's like, you know, even like good guys don't wear white. Fun song, you know?
Like you covered a Monkees song and it's awesome.
Right. So,
like, Stepping Stone. Come on.
So, Negative Approach, flawless victory. Like,
right?
7-inch and Tied Down, just about perfect. Strange. Not long ago, a buddy sent me the, there was a Negative Approach, like, like demos, kind of like odd recording that was released in maybe 2008, 2009, 2010, something like that.
Sure.
And it's Friends of No One. It's released in 2010. It's fine. It's like good. It's from demo sessions from right after the LP, maybe. It's worth checking out. And I have to admit, I remember it came out. It has a terrible cartoon cover in like bright colors. Like it's a lot. It's like a drawing of Negative Approach with John Brandon singing, and he's wearing the Negative Approach shirt and like the 7-inch cover shirt. And there's like a punker with a red mohawk, and it's just like, it's too much. No.
Yeah.
It's not what I want. But then
it's like when they redid the 7-inch cover.
Correct. But then you listen and you're like, oh, yo, this is good. Is it
like still, they fucked themselves up?
Yeah. It's light years behind the 7-inch and LP, but I still give them a flawless victory discography. I don't think there's a bad Negative Approach song. Period. Like, it's just fucking great. So wow, that's a great hot take. We don't have to get into it now, but I think we need to explore that on its own episode. Negative Approach versus Black Flag, and you're voting Negative Approach. Their consistency is way higher. There's no In My Head. There's no process of weeding out. There's no bullshit. Huh. Interesting. Okay.
Negative Approach. Give me John Brandon over Henry Rollins any goddamn day.
All right. You're up. What's your next one?
Midwest. All right. Where do we want to go? Like, there's no rhyme and or reason to any of them.
I don't have any rhyme or reason either. So just take us somewhere and we'll give it a quickie.
All right. So we'll go. All right. My first stop in Louisville.
Yes.
A band that I love that I felt the first 7-inch and that first LP are some of my favorite records of the time period.
Yes.
By the grace of God.
Tom, are you going to be surprised that they also made my list?
Yes. I would not have expected that because I feel like people are an Endpoint. Like, I feel like Endpoint is like the band that people like go to for Rob Pennington. But I kind of think By the Grace of God is better.
By the Grace of God just straight up is unequivocally better. Not to say I don't like some Endpoint too. And I actually get, if you're from the region, Endpoint might have more significance in that like forefather way, you know, like not, you know,
like King Horse or whatever, like bands that are like,
sure. Yeah. But By the Grace of God. Okay. Here's my two takes on it. I don't think either's too hot. The second is a little hotter. This one's a little just like By the Grace of God is to me what I always wished shit like Boy Sets Fire sounded like. And it just didn't, because Boy Sets Fire seemed like the boneless version of By the Grace of God. Like By the Grace of God, melodic, emotional, but like still had teeth, you know? And Rob's got his own, he got a very signature voice. I think this is where it works best. And he sang in Black Cross, right?
Yep.
This is his peak. I think he's maybe technically a better singer by Black Cross. On the perspective LP, I just think it's like perfect. I think it sounds great.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're probably lost to the sands of time for a lot of younger folks, but like,
no question.
It's moshy. It's fucking great. He's a great lyric writer. If you haven't checked out By the Grace of God either, for the love of indie rock
or
which I think was a shot of Chamberlain, if I remember correctly.
Yes, there was
either Chamberlain or a shot at the Enkindles, but I think it was Chamberlain.
Yeah.
Oh no, it couldn't have been the Enkindles because the singer from the Enkindles intros the record,
and the singer of the Enkindles is in By the Grace of God. So, is it the singer? There's some shared membership,
but that's more Bricky.
Is it?
No. But yeah, I think it was a shot against. It was like when Split Lip became Chamberlain.
Oh, they were like,
I think, like a jokingly, like Waka Waka, like.
Yeah. Piss take.
Yeah.
My other take is that By the Grace of God synthesized the new age sound and the victory sound.
Yeah.
And maybe wrote this is a very 90s sounding record, but I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a, they do a lot of things that were signatures of the 90s that I think actually worked really well. And I think they do them very well on this record.
They weren't trite.
Yeah.
Because it was like, they were creating some bad stuff, you know, like now it sounds like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. I just, it's, so I was a big fan. I mean, I'm from New Jersey and I still repped Floor Punch more than By the Grace of God per se.
Oh yeah.
But sure. I liked By the Grace of God. I thought it was a really good band. And I thought, like, even at the time I was so interested in what they were doing and it kind of sounded like its own thing. So perspective to me, I like the LP more than the 7-inch, but 7-inch is good. The LP just pulled me in because I think it's a well done hardcore LP. And that's not, especially in this era, not always an easy thing to pull off, I don't think.
No.
Yo, great pick. All right, By the Grace of God.
All right.
My next one. I'm actually going to stay in Louisville, but I'm going to go back in time for the band, but not for me, because this was a band who I fell in love with since the start of Axe to Grind. And that is the band Squirrel Bait. A band I was familiar with, but like never gave the fair shake because of their stupid name.
Right.
sounds somewhere between like it's like that faster punk kind of Husker Du sound and alternative stuff. The song Sun God is one of the best, I just think it's an incredible song. Like the dude's it's got this weird like crescendo triumphant part. The dude's voice vaguely has like Kurt Cobain elements that pull me in. And I think this is like a band who is super easy to write off because their name is Squirrel Bait. And if you're not from Louisville, that might not mean anything to you. You might just be like, oh, Squirrel Bait. But this is a Gorilla Biscuits situation. You should be checking out this band. I think they're doing stuff in the mid 80s that other bands were low key, like, yo, this is cool. Let's do this on our side. And I could have seen influencing a lot of like the more melodic late 80s hardcore. I think Squirrel Bait is an awesome band and definitely one of my 12 favorite Midwest bands. So,
yeah. Wow. Some of the dudes went on to Slint.
That's right.
That gives you any. And the Lemonheads. Did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yo, this, they were a like low key, really important band. Only from doing Axe to Grind, shout out to my dude, Dave Murphy, who really put me on to him. But then other Louisville heads hit me up and were like, yo, that band, that's the band, them, King Horse, et cetera. But they're like Squirrel Bait's the early mid 80s Louisville hardcore punk band who was doing anything. And, that's kind of the story on some of these other bands we'll hit. But like, yeah, that's so cool. And their sound is their own. But if you like more melodic stuff, if you like Husker Du, if you like 90s alt rock, if you like the Lemonheads, if you like melodic punk, if you like anything in the pop punk or modern era, you should give Squirrel Bait a chance.
Wow.
All right. Hit us.
Ringing endorsement.
Boom, boom.
All right. I'm going to go a little bit more current, but not very.
Yes, please.
We'll mix it up so it's not just like, and here's another band, because I have a ton of bands that it's like in 1986 they put out their third LP. I don't want to do that right now.
I know it's hard for me. No,
it's me too. I have them on here. Like it's like, oh, this is an old band.
I have an honorable mention list so we can get some more current shit too though.
Good. Okay. So I'm gonna go we're gonna go farther west. And I'm gonna go to Modern Life is War.
Marshalltown, Iowa.
Oh man, okay. I think you know what, like those first two records at least are like modern day classics today.
They
know not for everybody, but and one of the more intense, engaging live bands I've ever seen.
I think they became like it's I was about to call them the bane of the Midwest. And I think that's actually diminishing. Like, that's not, they're worth more than that, which I was saying that like in a very glowing way, like, yo, being the bane of anywhere seems like it's a pretty big thing, you know?
Pretty good place to be, yeah.
Yeah, but like they kind of superseded that. Like, I think that at least for a time, they were name-checked as a important reference for hardcore bands and then bands who were trying to do things slightly out of hardcore too.
And yeah, the now, Defeaters, the Touches, all those bands, I think.
Would note Modern Life is War as being a band who it's like, hey, they made me realize I could do an aggressive band that was highly emotive, you know?
Right. And melodic. And yeah.
But so, and yo, I mean, I know there's a lot of people who talk about the like mid 2000s, the 06 to 09, like melodic hardcore wave. Whether they'll cop to it or not, Modern Life, well, whether the people would cop to it or not, I think Modern Life is War has more influence on that stuff than many people will acknowledge. So shout out to them for sure. And still, I think still kind of like not active, but like maybe they'll
put they just played a show.
I think
in Iowa
shows. Did they in Marshalltown?
I don't think it was Marshalltown. Okay. It wasn't Des Moines. But I feel like they did another show like with like local punk bands, like in the last, you know, over the summer, if anything.
Yeah, I feel that. I think it's, I didn't, outside of Des Moines, I couldn't name another place in Iowa. And I'm a
Ames.
Ames. Oh, yeah.
That's all I got.
All right. There you go.
But I mean, honestly,
one other. But yo, like Marshalltown, like how come everybody in hardcore knows what that city is now? You know, that
I could have picked
quote unquote city, town, you know?
Yeah, I would never have known Marshalltown if it wasn't for them. Yeah. And I always say, literally, them at 538 Johnson to this day is one of the top five live shows I've ever been to in my entire life.
Wow, that's big.
Like, legitimately like that. I was like, this is... I was like, it's up there with, like, GB at, like, the reunion at CB's and, like, fucking... Right. Like, Andrew WK at Furnace Fest.
Just, like,
which was just energy. Chaos. Like, it was just, like... Not saying like Andrew UK is like the best band in the world or whatever, but like that show where there's like 3,000 people that are so hyped to see this dude.
Yeah.
And he's like so psyched. He was like, you know, doing everyone's outgoing voicemails on their cell phones and stuff. And like he got up there and like would wear a different shirt of a band during every song. Like it was like the most like, we love you, he loves us kind of deal that I've ever seen for a music act ever. But yeah. Modern Life is War and one of the big apartments at 538 Johnson was legitimately one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, no exaggeration.
Yeah. So we deride on the, you know, loft punk scene, but that's not what we're talking about. In the mid 2000s. Hardcore show. Yeah. In the mid 2000s, when some of those folks were doing hardcore shows in these spots, if it was a good show, it became super good. If it was a super good show, it became legendary. And I think that's what that Modern Life is War show was.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, imagine, you know, you like at someone's like living quarters. I mean,
yeah,
it's not a house. Let's be realistic. You're living in a fucking old, you know, industrial, you know, they probably made like rivets or something, but like imagine 400 people in your living room. Because that's what the fuck it was.
Yeah.
Like human beings everywhere you could see.
Just falling over on each other. Ugh.
Yeah, it was incredible.
All right. So I'm going to piggyback off that, the idea of the live experience and being so important. I'm going to do two bands at once because I think it's... And keep the wheels moving here. Nine Shocks Terror and Gordon Sully Motherfuckers.
Okay.
So I want to say two things.
Ohio,
Cleveland.
Cleveland, that's right. What a weird town.
Nine Shocks Terror on recording holds up. Talked about them before, but probably not enough. They were, I mean, they're named after a lip cream LP, so they have some Japanese hardcore influences, I would say, just a touch.
Yeah.
But with this also really Cleveland idea and like, acknowledgement of rock and rhythm and how to like almost nothing makes my skin crawl like the idea of punk and roll or like punk bands are like, yeah, but we're kind of like we have a lot more rock influences on this record. I'm like, oh shit, that's like a
cool Turbo Negro. Got it.
Right. Or just like, yo, you're gonna fuck up whatever energy you have. When bands hit it and do it right, can be really well done. Nine Chalk's Terror did it from jump, basically, where fast, kind of shreddy hardcore, the really throaty vocalist, and then licks. Like, they could just jam and really big riffs, but like not in that like Van Halen way, more in a like, hey, we're just gonna do some shit here that's gonna make you like bob your head and like feel this song, even though it's kind of raging by. And they were a very awesome live band. Singer Lean Steve was known for being a nut and just put on a great show, whole thing. I saw him the day after September 11th in New Jersey. Tom in a space called Joyce Kilmer. That was, I mean, it was about the size of your apartment, maybe a little smaller, you know?
Yeah.
And it was totally nuts. There's a video up on YouTube, so people should go watch that. They were awesome. But I'm grouping them with Gordon Solie motherfuckers because Tony Erber was in both bands. Tony Erber sang for Gordon Solie. Nine Chalk's Terror, by my estimation, miles better than Gordon Solie on record. But Gordon Solie live was off the fucking chain. Erber just went nuts, brought a lot of energy. The music was basically kind of perfectly crafted for that fast punk hardcore show, like everybody go nuts. And people would go crazy and do crazy stuff during the show. And like, I'm not one for gimmick shit, you know? I was actually talking with a friend about the band Haymaker, and they shared a story about Haymaker bringing two sets of amps to a show. So they had the shitty ones so they could break those, you know, play with the good ones. But also, you know what? If you put on a good show and people go nuts, I'm not mad. If you put on a spectacle and it's fun, Gordon Solie did that. I saw him at their the Easter show. They did a legendary show on Easter. It was Kill the Man Who Questions, No Justice, Dead Nation, and Gordon Solie. And we'll have to get some other characters on to tell the story, but it was one of the most out of control shows I ever saw, on a very depressing, weird Easter Sunday in Cleveland, when it felt like we were the only people, and people at that show were the only people out on the streets in Cleveland. So that was enough that I was like, yo, this band is awesome. I went to their last show a couple years later, same spot, Speaking Tongues. And a bunch of us from New Jersey would drive to Cleveland for shows. I think we did at least two, maybe three. Drove out there to see this Japanese band Exclaim play once. But they were always awesome shows. The Gordon Solie motherfuckers' last show was one of these shows, Tom, where I was, maybe I'd turned 20, but I might have been 19. I don't know. And I weighed like a 140 soaking wet. And there were so many people packed in this spot. I was climbing up on the speakers on the side, diving off, would roll around on top of people and just go back over to the speakers and then dive again and dive again and dive again. It was fucking awesome. So their records are good. They have a 7-inch and a 10-inch. This 10-inch is better.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
If I'm listening to Tony Erba bands on record, it's Nine Chalk's. If I'm listening to Tony Erba singer bands he sings in, I'm listening to face value. But if I'm thinking about seeing Tony Urban Band, I'm thinking about seeing Gordon Sullivan Motherfuckers. They were so good. Like, I can't even, like, I can't do those shows justice other than to say those are easily 20 years ago, and I'm getting excited now as a very adult person thinking about it. So shout out to Cleveland, Cleveland Rock.
I always saw those bands as like the, like, it's probably wrong, but like of the Rambo ilk.
So
like,
it was
Rambo, Ultimate Warriors, all stuff that I'm like, all right, it's weird. So, it's crazy for the sake of being crazy.
Right. Gordon Solie, it became, it was less. So Rambo, man, I shit on Rambo all the time. But I will say this. Rambo were kind of in on it more so than maybe other bands. Like, they were part of the assembly squad building the cardboard swords and shields, you know?
Right. Where, and the tanks and whatever the fuck.
Yeah. 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 And like, yo, man, you might have just heard that and been like, damn, that sounds cool. If you thought that, go see Rambo. You might have the time of your life. If you heard that and went, damn, that sounds weak as hell, don't put that on a band like Gordon Solie. Gordon Solie's show, when it was just people being crazy and doing crazy stuff. The Easter show specifically. All right, so the Easter show. I'll do the 2-minute version of this. Timmy No Justice was moshing on top of Ian Dixon's car. Ian Dixon being someone who booked a bunch of shows in New York for a very long time. Shout out to our buddy Ian.
Hey, Ian.
Timmy was moshing on top of Ian's car because a woman had caught her significant other, boyfriend, whatever, baby daddy, whatever, cheating on her, I believe, and was proceeding to just beat his ass in the street. So he was so excited, he started moshing on top of Ian's car, then moshed through the front windshield, cracked his windshield. It was easily one of the most depressing days of my life until the show started. Like, it was Easter Sunday. Everybody had just left Chicago Fest 2000. It was an awesome show. Like, the furthest east that Life's Hall, What Happens Next, had made it. One of the very first Limp Wrist shows, and it was crazy. I mean, it was just a wild show where I saw every band from Ensign to like Ruination get insane reactions. So coming off of that was like, oh, we're going to play Cleveland. Show up, the city feels abandoned, and it's Cleveland. And so then there's this weird explosion of energy during Gordon Solie where all of a sudden, like, people are bringing giant potted plants from the street and smashing them in the show. And like, wait, where did those tires come from that are being thrown around? And there's fireworks and like smoke bombs and all this crazy shit. It was certainly performative, but it was a different energy than Rambo, if that sort of makes sense. The last show really wasn't that. The last show was just like crazy pack sold out hardcore show where people are stage diving to this crazy band. So shout out.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Someone booked Nine Shocks Terror in 2022. I will go.
Wow. All right. Maybe they come to Asbury Park.
Let's fucking do this. Tom, hit me. What's your next one?
All right. I'm going to go your way, and I'm going to double up.
Double up.
Same era, same area.
Ooh. Okay.
One more adjacent than the other. But on my list for the Twin Cities, we're going to go Husker Du and the Replacements.
Okay. One is on my list. The other is not. Which is on my list, which is not.
Husker Du is definitely on your list.
They are on my list. Replacements are not. Replacements are an incredible band. I'm just like, I'm not a Replacements poser. I just don't go to the records the way I'd like to. So it's like, I'm like, can't hardly wait. Incredible song, you know?
Like, yeah. So, I mean, I think they're more like listenable sometimes than Husker Du.
I don't think I'd argue that.
So like, if it's like, I want some like Midwest, mid-80s, like punk-a-jace rock, Yeah. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you go a little further afield and you go for replacements, scratch that itch, you know,
pleasant punk, you know what I mean? It's like palatable. You could play the replacements in your office anytime, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, some people are like, oh, I know this song, or like, Can't Hardly Wait, I remember the movie.
Yes.
Goddamn right. One of the best movies ever fucking made.
Really good. Great cinema.
But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, either, I mean, Husker Du, I think, what they ended up becoming towards the end, and, you know, Bob Mould going into Sugar and then his own solo stuff.
Yeah.
Unbeatable. Like one of the best songwriters that punk has ever had.
So I was going to actually ask you this with Husker Du. Do you like Sugar more?
Easily.
Yeah. Then let's
put Copper Blue is like one of my favorite records ever. Right. Full stop. Like, yeah. Like,
okay. Yeah. Sugar. Put them on this list. That's a good one.
They're heavy. Sugar's kind of heavy.
I need to give that record another listen. I think
Copper Blue is like the best of like anything you like from Husker Du. I feel like Copper Blue is like that and more.
Wow. That's a huge endorsement.
Okay. It's literally, it's like all time one of my favorite records and like top five rock records for me.
Husker Du was doing stuff in the mid 80s that I think you can hear in Title Fight. In the early Title Fight records. I don't know that it's intentional, but I can hear it. I think Husker Du influenced shit like Sam I Am and
Lifetime.
I mean, Lifetime covered them. Yeah. And like even like post hardcore bands with a sense of melody in the early 90s. Yeah. You know, maybe not Helmet, maybe not bands who are more on the bassy side, but any who got into some singer stuff, even when Quicksand starts leaning in towards the end with like the unreleased demos type stuff or like the comp tracks, you know, Shovel, like I think Husker Du was doing stuff that just set the path for a large swath of punk and indie punk and pop punk and even melodic hardcore.
Yeah.
And you made a great note. The Replacements might be more listenable than Husker Du all the time. I think that's true. I think they're just the Replacements are
a drunk rock. Like they happen to be like punk kids in a bar band.
Yeah. They're like punk, pop, punk, like like pop, punk, something like that. You know, like they're pop,
like power pop almost. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. They're kind of post, you know, they're mid 80s power pop. There's no reason your aunt couldn't like them. Whereas Husker Du, a little more angular, a little more moody, in a funny way. And it's funny to say that because I think they're so tuneful. Like the song Pink Turns to Blue, like that's really grown on me a lot. And it's like one of my go-tos. So yeah, I think Husker Du is a phenomenal band. Here's my question. And I think we maybe talked about it, but we didn't totally. Are they a hardcore band or are they adjacent to hardcore?
I mean, I think they started as a hardcore band.
Yeah.
They're on SST.
And I think Metal Circus and everything before that, the like singles, that's all Landspeed Record. I think that stuff you could all say, yeah, that's hardcore. And it's, you know, it's getting some melody. It's, you know, I mean, Metal Circus is 7 songs in 18 minutes.
Right.
I think once you get into Zen Arcade, things start to be very clearly a different style, like not post-hardcore in the way we typically define it, but it's, you know, it's American post-punk. I don't know. Early, you know, mid 80s post-hardcore. It's what they were doing when they were like, oh, okay, cool. We're going to evolve our sound now. But that's where I, you know, Zen Arcade, Candy Apple Gray, I love. Flip Your Wigs got some tracks. Like, so that, they've kind of really grown on me. All right. Copper Blue is on my list to really do some earworming with. And the Replacements, I just, you know, there's one other band that I saddle right up next to the Replacements that I will mention in the honorable mentions. And you might have them in your list. To go a little more modern, but still not very modern. Tom, we're fucking gray hairs.
I have a modern band on here.
Okay, good. Los Crudos.
They were on my list.
Okay, great. Tom, can I just say this? Obviously, very important. Political. Chicago band. Hispanic, Latino, you know, like just made that a thing, made you aware of it. I mean, almost all their songs fully in Spanish. They were just a superior fast hardcore band too. Like they were just better than almost all the other bands of the time playing fast hardcore in a time where, you know, if you look around the country in 1994, 95, 96, 97, there's some good stuff. There's some not so good stuff, but Los Crudos were just better. They just were better. And Martin is a superior frontman too. So,
and it's I mean, have you, like, they're one of those bands that are like so tied to their city.
Yep.
Like, I feel like they're as like Chicago hardcore as like fucking, you know, Mad Bulls New York hardcore. Like, you know what I mean? Like, those bands could not exist if they weren't from their towns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If they existed from, you know what I'm saying? Other, like, space, yeah, they'd be radically different. Right. Oh, my God. Yeah. So, Los Crudos, if you haven't listened to them in a while, listen to them. If you've never heard them, check out maybe the best fast hardcore band of the 90s.
Unbelievable. And the stuff that they did, like, to keep, you know, like punk, like, alive and flourishing in Chicago and in like the Pilsen area in Chicago and stuff like that. I was talking to our friend, our buddy, David Anthony.
Yes.
Who's my Chicago confidant. And, you know, kind of running stuff by. And he was like, the only bands that I could think of people bringing up, but like, it was more like for Chicago that were more for like, the sizzle more than the steak would be okay. Charles Bronson,
mm-hmm.
or Race Traitor.
Mm.
But they're more, both bands are more well known for the for not their music, and not in a bad way.
No, that's 100% true. No question about it. I mean,
like, I feel like Charles Bronson's known for being like the band that fucked with everybody.
Yes.
Like someone can name five fucking Charles Bronson songs.
If you can name their songs, it's because you think they're very clever songs. And some of them are pretty clever. They really liked doing the fun, like random record pressings, weird stuff. They were all into that. Their LP, which is called Youth Attack, but it was actually put out by Lengua Armada, Martin's label. Had the was it the metal version? Oh my gosh, I gotta find it. The only rare version of it, it had like a metal cover, I believe. Let's see this. I'm trying to find the description of it. Yes, okay. Clear vinyl nestled in a red velvet and silkscreen soft metal cover. Supposedly pressing of 333, each hand numbered out of 330, each hand numbered 334, blah, blah, blah. Although it's claimed only about 100 to 150 were actually assembled. They also had quote unquote virgin center labels, AKA the center labels didn't have the hole poked through them.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So that then, you know, if you were a true record collector, well, you don't want to poke the record. And that was that, like, when it came out, was going for well over $100. I think it's right now, I'm looking at Discogs, it's the median price is $187. That's probably not bad on the inflation. So, Los Crudos is to people who like faster hardcore, I think they are the Chicago band, you know, and maybe there's people down the line who might cite other stuff, might cite Weekend Nachos, might say Harm's Way, you know what I mean?
Right, the Killer.
The Killer. And then you go to the heavier side, which I think the Killer, Karma's getting there.
But I think even all those bands would be hesitant to not, even if they didn't like Crudos.
They have to name check it and nod at it. Like, 100%. Yo, it's It's weird because they're one of those bands that I just think you could feel their political like nature, and it kind of exuded from them. And sometimes that overshadows the actual just quality of the music, which is awesome, but that's a good thing. Like Los Cruces right. made a bunch of white kids in suburbia across the country listen to politically charged, activated, urban Hispanic young people talk about their lives and their struggles and all the bullshit they've had to deal with purely because of the color of their skin.
Right.
And their perspective. And I think that's a huge positive. So shout out to Crudos and shout out to, yeah, the Chicago's most important hardcore band.
Yeah. I mean, and like to be fair, Race Traitor did a lot of that stuff too.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, and that band was even more like, what the fuck at the time mm-hmm. when everyone was like a fucking white bread dude and fucking in a collared shirt in that scene. And that they were scene, like,
100%.
And you're like, what the fuck? Like, it was like such a shock to the system. So, I mean, props to them too. But yeah, I think okay. overall, you'd have to go for Crudos.
Yeah.
All right. So. Here, what do we go? We going to Jace or we going current? Do you want to go current?
Give us current. Let's bring ourselves up to speed.
All right. Here's a band that of all the bands we've mentioned so far, I would go to as far to say they might be the second biggest band we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
And we're going back to Louisville. You can't talk about the Midwest without Knock Loose, man.
No, you can't.
They're the big, I mean, other than the Replacements, they're the biggest band we mentioned. Think about it.
Oh,
they're bigger than Integrity.
Yeah, no. I mean, so Negative Approach probably gets name checked more. Knock Loose plays to more people every night than
they're on a festival.
Ever has. Yeah.
They're on a festival with all the bands we've mentioned so far. Who plays after them?
Yeah, nobody. No question.
Replacements?
Maybe. Yeah.
They played like arenas, like when they did.
Sure.
But other than that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's crazy.
The Replacements fans are very scared during the Knock Loose set. What the fuck's going on? it's Replacements Knock Loose headlining Midwest Fest is a true parent and kid event, I think. So.
You hear that Riot Fest? If you really want to like make everyone happy, co-headliner, Riot Fest Saturday night, Replacements and Knocked Loose. Knocked Loose second to last, Replacements last.
Let's get Bob Mould in the mix. Yeah, we're suggesting a cool thing here. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a good fit. I mean, I think their impact and like at a time when being from the Midwest wasn't the coolest thing in the world. They kind of put it on their back and made it a thing.
Yeah, they really did.
So, I mean, regardless of what you think of the music or whatever, like if there's, you can't overlook them. Cause I feel like, wasn't for Turnstile, they'd be the most talked about band in.
Oh, and most if our heavy music was a little different. We would be talking about them even more. You know what I mean? I think if we are each a decade younger doing this podcast, maybe we're just talking about Knock Loose, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, I think you see these videos and stuff. It's like everywhere. It's not like, that Tuesday night in fucking wherever in Ames, Iowa was a little iffy. No, there's still hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids there too. Like they don't miss. It's crazy.
They're converting kids to at least Knock Loose, if not all the way in a hardcore, but like, probably one of the biggest gateway bands of all time. And we'll see what that impact is. But like, they're the hardcore band who I think, you know, and like, I'm not, their music's not really my bag, but like, you see them, you hear their music in 2021, they are a hardcore band.
Yep.
They don't go out and play games. They're not on some like, let me get dressed up, here's some makeup, blah, 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 nonsense. But they go play Knotfest. There's kids, there's worms leaving that show, Knocked Loose fans, and thinking, maybe I don't need to have these pants on. Maybe I should. Those dudes just look like they're going out and rocking what they do. All right.
Right.
What's that band shirt that dude was wearing? Like, they are gateway.
They all rep. They all rap.
Yeah, they are gatewaying a lot of kids into hardcore, and I think that's like indisputable, like no question.
Yeah, I mean, the only band that I could think of that was, I mean, there are two. There's Hatebreed, yep, and it's Biohazard in the last fucking 30 years.
Yeah,
that have been that much of like a gateway band to me.
No, I think you're right. Hatebreed.
Right. I mean, who else?
Yeah.
Like of a band of like huge that were like, you know, kids that were going to see Hatebreed open for fucking Slipknot are now fucking, you know, rocking fucking 100 Neben shirts.
Right. Right.
Like, yeah, you know what I mean? And Biohazard was the gateway band for like mine. Like, I mean, anyone past now, like 1990.
Mm-hmm.
That was in like New York. That's hardcore. How you got into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, huge, you know.
So yeah, no, shout out to those dudes. We should have them both back on. We've had Isaac back
on. Would love to have them both back on.
That's a good idea. All right, let's put it on the list.
Well, so I'll talk to their manager, see what he can do for us.
Shout out.
Shout out, Vitalo.
All right. I'm going to hit maybe... So Negative Approach is the GOAT, but the Scottie Pippen to their Michael Jordan is the Necros. And here's the problem. Here's the problem for the Necros. Because of internal band beef, these records have never been repressed or reissued. They've been bootlegged a bunch. Tom,
sure.
The Conquest for Death LP is fucking, it's classic Midwest hardcore. It's just a touch weirder. Like, it's not meat and potatoes. Like, it's so, whereas Negative Approach is more like the Abused, Necros are somewhere between urban, they're kind of urban wastey. They've got sharp guitars, pissed off vocals, but that are more snarling than gruff, like Brannon. And they get not snotty, but like more biting, if that works. And the tone on the Conquest for Death LP is perfect to me. I think it's like one of the best sounding hardcore records of all time. It is worth the YouTube Necros Conquest for Death full album listen. And it's like, yo, that's a pain in the ass. Someone needs to figure out how to, oh yeah, that's right. I'll send you a link. There may or may not be a secret Necros band camp that made this possible to listen to.
Oh well, because yeah, I was just looking
not
at
understood if it's legit or not, and it was shared to me in a way as to, hey, let's not blow up this spot. So
got it.
Everybody who's listening, keep that quiet and let's not blow up that spot.
Yeah, they have 11 songs on streaming, but Ambionic Sound and Clubhouse Session. So this is probably nothing.
No, not.
And it's like one of those bands that like I've heard on like mixtapes over the years of like hardcore. You know, like
for sure,
or like they'd be playing, but like, total fucking blind spot because like the people that I grew up with that got me into some stuff,
yeah,
like Necros weren't on the list.
No, they're not on the list. Yeah. No, but here's the thing: Negative Approach, Total Recall, right? That discography CD meant a lot for a lot of people, made it accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Necros never got that treatment, as we've discussed. Like, yo, it's just harder to hear. I think they. They're the other pillar to me of touch and go. It's
wow.
Negative Approach, Necros. And like, if you catch me on a weird day and I just said Tied Down top 15, 20 LP, you catch me on a weird, and I love it. Like I'll talk to somebody about Tied Down all day. Catch me on a weird day. And I might say Conquest for Death is as good. Maybe better. It's right there.
Wow.
I love Conquest for Death. So yeah. And the Necros.
Hit me with that link.
I will. Maumee, Ohio. The only one I can think of. There's other bands from Ohio from the 80s and obviously through the 90s and into the 2000s and all that. But
Necros weren't from Detroit.
No.
Necros. I always thought of them as a Michigan band.
No. So Maumee is right outside of Toledo, I believe.
Oh, so it's like, it's right Michigan adjacent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. This is a very good donut place in Maumee that I've now been to three times. So I'm like a regular. Who's up next?
It's me.
Go.
All right. I have five left.
Well, I have three. Let's just do like one hitters because we're starting to drag here on time.
Sure. Okay. Four are Jace and one is like still hardcore.
Ooh, okay.
So all right, we'll do my hardcore now and then I'll tie together the Jace.
Excellent.
How's that?
Sounds great.
All right, for my last hardcore pick, Cole S.
Okay. I was relying on you for some of the Midwest more metal-y stuff.
Yeah.
So Coalesce, go in.
Yeah. I mean, I think they were, you know, from fucking Kansas City, middle of nowhere. Signed to Earache like relatively early on. Kind of weird, like a band that could only come from where they came from.
Right.
Sort of, you know, on that, not as kind of chaotic, very chaotic, but not on the Dillinger Converge end of chaos.
Right.
More slow and kind of grind, like droney almost. Their shows were like infamous back in the day. Just like legit chaos.
Do you think they've gotten lost in the sands a little bit?
You know what? They've become more of like a fucking like a door guy band.
Oh, yeah.
And it sucks because like I feel like if you like, you know, if you like fucking Jesus Piece, you would probably see Coalesce and be like, God damn. OK.
Right. So
but I don't know if that would ever happen.
Yeah.
You know, like they toured and they played like New York probably within the last 10 years. And it was like. Oh, it's like the guy from Murder City Devils, like weird band is opening. Like, or like, you know, it wasn't like, you know, them and any remotely like current hardcore bands. It was them and like weirder, kind of noisier stuff, which is fine. I mean, whatever. It's their choice. They can do whatever the fuck they want.
Totally. But you're going, oh, wait, hardcore and metalcore type stuff has kind of actually moved towards your sound. You would probably do pretty well playing with a few of those bands.
I mean, they still killed it. I mean, their show was like sold out of it. But like,
sure.
I remember meeting them through our mutual friend, Lou Hawk.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Because cool. Lou worked for Earache at the time.
Oh, that's cool.
And we were going to a show and he goes, I want you to come see this band. He's like, they're the heaviest straight edge band of all time.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Okay.
And I remember being like, all right. And like, we met up and they were playing the Limelight in front of like, no, and the Limelight was a very big venue in the city.
Yes.
It was like a dance club, but like the main room was like, had to be almost like 1,000 people. They were playing in front of maybe 50. It was like very like industry.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the guitar player was like, you know, flailing and doing what, you know, they do at hardcore shows and he fell off the stage.
Oh.
And a funny part of the story that you'll enjoy. So, I became friendly, you know, like when I met up with Lou and talking to Sean Ingram, who's a singer from Coalesce, we were talking all of Indecision was working at Roadrunner at the time,
right,
not
right,
me.
Right. Yes.
So everyone we had we had tapes of Mantra.
Oh, wow.
So we were talking about Shelter outside the show and whatever. I was like, dude, you gotta listen to this song. I'm like, there's a song in here that sounds like it could be a Youth of Today song. And he's like, what? I'm like, dude, Ray even does the Ray voice. And I remember like sitting outside with my like yellow fucking Sony Walkman.
Yeah.
And like playing him Mantra. And he's like, yo, this is actually really good. I go, I know. But like, they were always like, we were always like friendly with them, got to play with them a ton. But like, I think they were like incredibly heavy, you know, and kind of got lost sometimes in the sauce.
Yeah.
Like, cause they didn't tour, but they didn't go on as long as Converge did and kind of got a whole new crop of new fans and, you know, or like Dillinger got bigger or like,
right. That
they're
that
in the matters. Botch area. They're in the Botch Narrows area that like for a time they were the biggest thing going. And now,
yeah, they,
you know,
I mean, it's a testament to the bands who did do those things like Converge. I think Converge is a great example because they just did more records and their sound evolved and they kept in front of people a little more. And you know, that's not to dismiss like their seminal work, you know, like,
yeah.
But it is to say, like, hey, they kept it moving. And if you don't do that, it can get really easy. It can become easy to slip out of rotation for people, which is weird. You know what I mean? But it certainly happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think Converge has more fans that are like here for the new shit than want to hear the saddest day. They've done like a full turnover.
Right. It's gone through.
They've churned their fans, which is incredible. That's
wild. Yes. Good point. Wow. You know, and in the late 90s, Coalesce was one of the bands you mentioned. You know, it's like, oh, you know, like stuff like Converge, Coalesce, Cave-In, like they were in that mix. So, all right. My next one really quick, Zero Boys, Indianapolis punk hardcore band. Their LP, Vicious Circle, it's like perfect. It's a perfect punk hardcore record. Tom, if I played it for you and said, oh, this is a lost, like, this is a bunch of dudes who were going to the Danger House Golden Voice LA punk shows in 79, but then wanted to do a hardcore band in 80, 81, that was halfway between Circle Jerks and Adolescence. That's this record, except they're from Indianapolis.
I didn't realize they were from Indiana. That's weird.
Yeah. Yo, I mean, the record is incredible. Toured a bit in so much as you'll actually see Zero Boys on like some crazy flyers. It's like, oh, this Torrance LA show that they played with Dead Kennedys and Minor Threat and the Zero Boys from Indianapolis. Like, what? This record also, like, it's one of these things. Tom, this was a blind spot to me until like the mid-2000s when I think the No Way Records scene kind of like picked up on this record and really brought it to light. I think it got reissued around the time. And I was like, yo, how did I miss this? Like, I'm a total nerd for all this shit. And I heard it. I'm like, yo, this is awesome. Like, anthemic, memorable, fast, little snotty, but not in that shitty way. No fake accents put on. Just like fast hardcore. It's on all the streaming services. And the singer, I think maybe main songwriter from the band, also has like a very prolific producing career that includes like John Mellencamp, Afghan Whigs, The Fray, like all this shit he's done. So I believe the Hives cover a song off this record, like on one of their records. Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yo, when this is the one record band on this list that I'm saying, yo, you got to hear this record because you'll like it a lot. You'll be like, oh, Jesus, this is just early 80s punk hardcore that has that classic feel, but it's memorable and catchy. Whereas certain stuff, you know, it washes over you. This record is a keeper.
Duly noted. I was funny you bring this up. Tim has like been posting a bunch of stuff on Ensign's like Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they played with Zero Boys in 2005 at CB's.
Yes. They played a bunch of those CB's reunion shows.
Like, oh, so it was Hymen Holocaust, which was a band.
Ooh.
Apparently. Hymen Holocaust, Ensign, Fearless Vampire Killers, which was JJ.
Yep.
And Zero Boys. That's a fucking show.
It's a show. Yo, CB's show. Had such a lineage of like regrettable openers. And like with terrible ass names, you know what I mean? Like just shit. My last one, let me do my last one because you're three of Jace, you can string together. And like they were favorite Midwest bands. This band, it's a 7-inch. This is the best Midwest 7-inch. I'm gonna say it. I think this is the best Midwest hardcore 7-inch outside of Negative Approach. The band is The State and the record is No Illusions. This was one that I got into in the early 2000s. People who aren't familiar, there were these comps called Killed by Death. They were vinyl comps that collected rare singles from like obscure, rare punk, power pop, international stuff. Regional stuff too. They do like Killed by the Location, highlighting singles and tracks that just were hard to find anywhere. And it was kind of like this, hey, maybe someone only pressed 200 copies of a 7-inch, but the A side is actually really good. So they did these Killed by Death comps in the early 2000s, and they were bootlegs, you know, they certainly weren't like authorized all the time. In the early 2000s, someone started doing Killed by Hardcore comps. That's where I learned about this band State. And the 7-inch is just awesome. Makes me think of Black Flag, but if Black Flag was from the Midwest, it's somewhere between Black Flag Damage. If Black Flag Damage was concise and focused onto a 7-inch that was written by Midwest hardcore kids, put a 7-inch out on Touch and Go. Did not come out on Touch and Go. But it's just classic hardcore. And it's like, when I haven't listened to it a while and I put it on, I'm like, oh my God, this record rips. Like, it deserves a place at the table with all the early classic, like 80s 7-inches. So wow. The State, that's my, those are two records. I think Zero Boys, Vicious Circle, and The State, No Illusions. Tom, I would actually be super surprised if you didn't like those. Oh, and I didn't mention Die Kreuzen, self-titled Maniac Music. You have to hear it. All right. Give me your three adjacements.
There's actually four, but I'll go
four. Go four. And then we're
going to they're all from the area. They're all from the same general area. So we're going to go Alkaline Trio. Mm-hmm. They're a Jace. They're hardcore kids that play punk from Chicago. Pretty good band. You might like them. when I was going through and trying to pick a band from every state, Wisconsin, I struggled. But these were also hardcore kids that decided to try to do something different. The Promise Ring.
Oh yeah. Just a little band.
A little band, but they were hardcore kids that, like, you know, played hardcore shows. And at the time, like, if you were around for this shit, like, this was like pervasive in hardcore. All these bands, like, were you know, and I was like, at the time, I thought the Promise Ring was a little too cute for me in 1997 or whatever. And I was like, I don't really.
Certainly,
yeah, not really feeling. Yep. I came around to it in my older age, but like at the time, I was like, "This is way too sweet." Coalesce adjacent, the Get Up Kids,
on my honorable mentions for sure.
Incredible band, one of the best band of that style. Full stop. And then another hardcore band trying to do something different from Louisville, Kentucky, Elliot.
Oh, good poll. I completely spaced on Elliot.
Because I mean, because it's not, but they are. Like, it's weird.
They were hardcore kids, 100%. Those are
they definitely were. But like, were they a punk band playing piano? Probably.
Yeah, adjacent. They came from those chops, and like, really, it's like they would have been Russian Circles if they stuck around for 2 years, and might have been bigger. You know, False Cathedrals was like this
unbelievable
low key mammoth of a record. So if you like stuff, I think the record after that gets a little even more like airy.
US songs,
US
or Cold in the Air.
That one. US songs is a little more not rocking, but like to me, US songs and False Cathedrals are probably like the like, hey, these are Midwest emo. Like you got to listen to these, and then the record after starts to get
Song in the Air, not Cold.
Song in the Air almost gets to like not ambient, but it's very light. And you realize like, oh, they could have gotten into a different world with this direction and just
too early.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Just a little too early. All right. I got a bunch of quick hit honorable mentions. Tom, before I go, you didn't have a ton of like more the Midwestern metalcore stuff.
I have two that I want to do as honorable mentions.
Okay. Let's hear them.
I mean, you know, the late 90s, very influential bands from the same town. Got to go Harvest, Disembodied.
Yes, right.
Incredibly important. Like, Disembodied is literally the most ripped off band in heavy hardcore, right? And like metalcore right now.
Right.
And have been since Code Orange, honestly.
I mean, yes, it's one of those things where you inspire one band who then that influence lasts light years beyond you, and you could go, yep. Hey, that was them actually. So, all right. You mentioned them, but they deserve another honorable mention. Endpoint, relevant for Louisville. I think In a Time of Hate is a cool record. I don't go back to it. I think it's just one of those things where I thought By the Grace of God was just better. So when I do listen to it, I'm like, oh yeah, I like these songs. I have a warmth towards them. If By the Grace of God is just, if you'd like something that's 15% more late 80s Revelation style, go to Endpoint. Naked Ray Gun.
Yeah. I talked about that with David.
So I like Naked Ray Gun. I'm just not a full-fledged fan, you know?
That was my point. Like, they're obviously very important.
Yep.
But it's like, if I didn't want to pose hard and be like, bro,
right,
Naked Ray Gun.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we don't
fucking Articles of Faith, man.
Now, I will say, well, an Article of Faith is on my, I will note, on recent listens, I'm like, man, there's some like DC type stuff going on here, like that mid-80s DC. I can hear, it's like, oh, wait, did Rites of Spring pull a little bit from the Articles of Faith basket? Maybe. What I want to tell people is, if you're a Naked Ray Gun fan, or if you're not, and you're a Dag Nasty fan, or if you're a Dag Nasty fan and Naked Ray Gun fan, listen to the Naked Ray Gun song Rat Patrol, and then listen to the Dag Nasty song off Can I Say Thin Line. There's a little bit of a rift lift that I think...
Well, Jamie Havre going, Oz goes, Dance goes.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, I might want to, Brian Baker might need to go woo, woo, woo for that. The Effigies, another next to Articles of Faith, Chicago hardcore band. Late 90s, I want to shout out Committed from Cleveland. The Committed demo, when it came out in like 98, was kind of like this like beacon of hope for straight edge. Clean cut straight edge kids, like, oh my God, all right, there's got to be more bands like Floor Punch and 10 Yard Fight and Fast Break and In My Eyes. And they were kind of like part of the second wave that never totally crested, but that demo is really good. I still really like it. I listened to it today. The Grudge Match 7-inch, a little bit more Cleveland, but still in that kind of Committed world. Can't believe that's not on streaming. What are we doing, folks? Tom, have you ever heard the band from Chicago, Cavalry?
No.
Okay. The record is outnumbered, is outflanked. It is really good. How do I explain it? It's like melodic hardcore, but that also heard Wire. And so it's a little more punk, but with really good song structures. I might complain and say the songs are a little bit too long, but I have the attention span of a gnat. But it's awesome. Like, came out in like 2000, 2001, 2002. And yeah, like they have a small, almost like cult love. They have a paltry amount of monthly Spotify listeners. I hope everyone gives that record a check. Chance, Cavalry. Outnumbered is outflanked. Cool record. You said The Replacements, The Get Up Kids. Tom, we did not mention Ringworm.
They were on my list to begin.
Okay. And they just got bumped.
And then I thought, huh?
They got bumped.
Yeah, because I feel like if I had to, I didn't want to go too heavy on, and I knew you were going to pick some Clevo, like yeah, those
yeah.
bands.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to be fair.
You want to share the love. I get it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you had to, like, Integrity, Ringworm, pulling from the same branch. Mm. Figured I'd just give it to Integrity.
Yeah. Credit to Ringworm for continuing, and their branch goes a different direction than Integrity's. We got to find a year in the 2000s where they both put out a record like within a year of each other and compare the two. So I think that'd be a fun exercise.
I mean, probably latter day Ringworm is better than latter day Integrity.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too.
Yeah, but it's hard to say. You know, we didn't mention Cold as Life, which part of the scene is a huge, 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 huge influential band.
Recently, and this is I have to give credit to people. You know, an old friend of mine said this when he was listening to Cold. It was probably not 15 years ago, but very close to 15 years ago. He's listening to Cold as Life. I'm like, you like Cold as Life? What? And this is like a more punk. This dude's more this dude's more freedom than he is never ending game. Let's say it like that.
Sure.
And he's like, nah, man, the demos, it sounds like negative approach. Doesn't totally sound like negative approach, but it also doesn't not. If you,
that's 80s,
right? If you don't like Born to Land Hard, check out the demos before that. It might scratch an itch that you didn't know you had. How about Threadbare?
Good call. I biffed on them. Yeah.
We showed them a underrated bit of love. Yeah. We showed them a bit of love. I think both Patrick and I like them in a weird way. Cool. Another one. They're more on the, like, Tom, they're metallic, right? They're not, I wouldn't call them metalcore, but they're metallic hardcore. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Metallic 90s hardcore.
Yeah, but I think that's the problem is that they're not, they're heavy and weird.
Yep.
But they're like too heavy for one side of the coin and too weird for the other side.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're like, you go see them, you're like, oh, this is really good. But it's like, what do I do to this?
I think,
and that's the ultimate question in hardcore. What do I do to this? You either got to be able to stage dive, you got to sing along, or you got to mosh. If you don't have one of those three things going at any one time, it's a tough road to hoe. I'm just going to say.
Yeah.
If you get all three going in one song, you're a fucking mate person.
Yes, you are. The band Life Sentence from Chicago, maybe the only band from Chicago who I would say, yeah, they're a little bit like Uniform Choice and 7 Seconds. Like,
wild. Yeah.
Tom, they sound more like an Orange County hardcore band than they do any of the Midwest stuff. It's really good. I had this LP. I think I still own it. I haven't listened to it in a long time. I put it on today. I was like, oh shit, this is better than I remember it. Dude's vocals are not quite Pat Dubar, but in that very clear vocal kind of tone. And some of his cadence is that, like, Kevin Seconds thing. So shout out. We mentioned Face Value. I don't know if Limp Wrist counts themselves as a Chicago band, but important band for a lot of people. And again, not unlike Los Crudos, because they lean more with some of their conversation and what they're about and their identity than their music. Their music gets overshadowed, and Limp Wrist actually has some pretty good songs, like just good tracks.
Agreed.
I never got super into the crusty stuff in the Midwest, but Minneapolis had a pretty crazy crust scene. Code 13, State of Fear, despite actually being originating in Torrington, Connecticut. They do rep Minneapolis, so shout out to them. And then the only other ones I would say is the Chicago had a little bump up in the early 2000s with 14er Fight, Punch in the Face, and this band Wound Up. And I thought all three of those were just kind of like, hey, we're doing Midwest hardcore, like the Midwest. Cardiac Arrest a few years later, we're doing that in St. Louis. So yeah, man, the Midwest. Any others that we forgot? Oh, yo, shout out to Automatic from Louisville. Really like that band. First 7-inch is the best Dag Nasty hardcore-ish stuff outside of Dag Nasty. You got anything?
No, I think, I mean,
lot of Midwest.
Yeah. I mean, we went further than I thought we would. I was like struggling to keep it to 12, but yeah.
Yo, shout out to the Midwest. We love you. We'll do more. Give us your thoughts and feedback. We miss you, Patrick. Have a good night, everybody.
A little bit later.